This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
This is Joe Uris. That is Abe Proctor. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, 231-8187.
I don't know, man. I just don't know anymore.
What do you mean you don't know?
Well, usually the circus music was apt. In the past, it's always been fairly easy, at least for me, to tell who is in the circus and who is in the audience. But I just don't know.
Well, you know, look at it this way. I mean, there is a couple issues on the ballot that you can probably support.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to guess that you're with me on the fluoride thing, and that'll be fun.
Yeah, I think we ought to put it in the water.
You're crazy.
No, I don't think we ought to put it in the water.
Oh, okay. You're not crazy.
No. Well,
I don't know about that. All right. Listen, I've gotten very, very upset around the fluoride issue because all of my good – here's the deal. If you look at the demographics of likely voters in this election on the fluoride question, all the West Hills – and they vote. They do vote.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I know they vote is I know we lost a school bond levy way back when I was working for the public schools in the PR office because it snowed and people in the West Hills couldn't get out to vote. So we lost. The West Hills votes generally in favor of public programs, in favor of education. In this case, largely probably in favor of fluoridation.
Yeah.
And it seems also to follow a pattern of education. The generally well-educated will support fluoridation. It's part of their religion, which I use the term scientism, but I don't think that's right. There's got to be a better term.
No, it's not. I thought we debunked that.
Yeah, I think we got to do some better name for it.
Huh.
Belief in the authority of the American Dental Association, something like that. Anyway, so on that issue, it really depends. It absolutely depends on how many people who are unhappy with the idea of forced fluoridation turn out to vote.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I would like to ask you one thing, though. Can we agree on this? Can we agree that there are an awful lot of good, well-intentioned people who nonetheless support fluoridation of the water?
Oh, absolutely. This is not a good guys, bad guys thing at all.
Right. But it's taken on that sort of tone.
Well, in the midst of a campaign where one side says the other's lying and vice versa, you get a sense of bitterness and frustration. It's particularly true in this case where the whole thing came to the public's attention in a very sneaky way and very suddenly, and where people had to scramble to get the thing on the ballot. And then instead of it being a year from now, which would have allowed a real dialogue on the fluoride issue, a real intelligent dialogue, it was placed deliberately on the ballot this month, with Tuesday being election day, because I think it was going to be mixed up with the children's initiative. And the kids' initiative, I'm going to say right here and now, is a good thing.
Yeah, it is.
So if you like kids, how can you hate fluoride? You know, it's kind of like that.
Right.
So
the kids' initiative is a good thing. Yes, it begs a larger question, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. Right. But what I'm hoping is people will stick around for a reasonable conversation of the three. There are three measures on the ballot. Now, we're not going to discuss the candidates for the school board and so on.
No, that's up to you.
Well, we can't. You have to figure that out yourselves.
Right.
All right.
All right, moving on then.
Moving on.
Measure 26-150, the 5-year levy to prevent child abuse and child hunger. Yes.
I think this one is, first of all, folks, it's not going to increase your taxes. It's already part of what you're paying.
Right.
So that's really something that won't hurt you. At all. You're already paying for it. And there really are great programs under it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of it. There's child hunger issues. There's issues of child health. There's issues of after-school programs. There's issues of all nature in the interest of healthy, happy communities.
Yeah, absolutely worthwhile.
Yeah, so I guess Abe and I are both saying vote yes on the children's initiative.
There's not a single argument in opposition to this measure printed in the ballot.
Grouchiness. The grouch might be there.
The kid haters out there. And you know who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, but I mentioned this begs a larger question. And here it is. Why isn't our taxation revenue generation system robust enough to support such initiatives absent a special renewable levy targeted directly at them. In other words, why don't we have our stuff together such that we don't have to do this? Why aren't our children adequately taken care of? Why aren't our schools robustly funded? Why are we looking at another biennial budget in the state legislature, where we've got to choose between K-12 and higher education, like it's a zero-sum sort of game? I mean, what is this?
Well, this is – that you're looking at it at the state level, but at the national level.
Well, yeah, I was getting there, but go ahead.
No, no. I just think what has happened is the United States at the leadership level – doesn't matter whether it's Democrats or Republicans, it's a question of extent of horribleness. The leadership level in this country has failed. It has failed to understand that a healthy citizenry, an informed citizenry, an educated citizenry, a housed citizenry, a not hungry citizenry, makes for a good nation state. Instead, what we have is a sacrosanct ability of members of Congress to travel rapidly on the airplanes.
Yes, indeed.
And that's really important. And we have a constant warfare state. And in fact, every state in the union, including Oregon, has some skin in the game of continuing the defense budget. So we're stuck with that. Therefore, everything else plays second fiddle.
It would be laughable if it weren't so tragic. Seriously. Yeah, Rachel Maddow, who's a national treasure, by the way, on her program last week described the famous do-nothing Congress that Harry Truman railed against.
Yeah.
The campaign against which catapulted him to a very unlikely re-election.
Yeah,
the do-nothing Congress.
In 48.
Right. The present Congress has done even less.
Yeah.
Than President Truman's famous Do Nothing Congress. I think the Republicans in the House last week voted once again to repeal Obamacare for like the 30-somethingth time.
Yeah, they are. It is so bizarre. What is also bizarre is why doesn't Obama fight?
I really don't know.
Why doesn't he get up there and say, look at this is a Do Nothing Congress. Look at this. This is a scandal.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't understand. All I can say is I'm more disappointed in this president than I think I've ever been. In my adult life, in any president. His predecessor was also pretty bad, but I expected him to be bad.
Come on,
it wasn't
George
surprising
W. Bush.
To me that he was bad. And yes, call me up, call me naive. I'll take it all. I will progressives. I will be your centrists, liberal punching bag today. I was wrong about Obama.
Well, wait a minute.
I drank
what was
the
choice? What was the choice? What are you talking about?
I was wrong in such
in
that I
faith?
Thought he would be
you were yeah. wrong in your faith.
Yeah. I thought he would be different. I thought he would be more
so you're
like
a
FDR.
Racist.
You're
no, a racist.
I thought he would be
because he's black. He'd be cool.
Yes, that he would be that that great magic Negro salvation savior figure that so many white people like to invent. Yeah, no, that's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
No, what I'm talking about is I thought he'd be more like FDR and less like President Bush. Boy, was I wrong.
Well,
boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, but look at the whole Democratic Party has shifted to the right. Remember that Clinton did away with welfare.
Yeah, Clinton did away with welfare.
Which would be okay right. if it was replaced by education and jobs for everyone.
Yeah, and Clinton
which
sunk,
it wasn't.
Clinton sunk the last dagger into Glass-Steagall,
right.
which contributed to the financial meltdown of 2008.
Right.
In that respect, he's more responsible for it than President Bush was. But I'm so disappointed in this guy. I really am. I thought that at the very least we would see some FDR-style demand-side stimulus, and we saw some of that, but not nearly enough.
Well, what has happened is the whole field of economics has been perverted by the University of Chicago's ideas
yeah.
and Hayek and all those other weird theorists of economics.
Yes, Friedman.
Yeah, and the result of that is they ignore the thing we all learned in high school, supply and demand.
Yeah, that's exactly where I learned it
in high school.
They always
talk about supply, blah, blah, blah. Well, you got to have demand.
And I thought
in order to have demand, you got to have income. Well, okay, sorry.
And I thought at the very least we would see him dismantle or at least begin to dismantle the surveillance and detention state that was enshrined under Bush. If anything, that state has grown. That apparatus has become more sophisticated and more pervasive. The Associated Press just revealed how the Justice Department obtained a whole bunch of private correspondence between journalists.
Yeah.
It's nonsense. We just learned how the Internal Revenue Service was used to target conservative groups in the run-up to the last election. Nonsense. Yes, it is helpful to point out that these same sorts of things happened during the previous administration. Yes, it's helpful to point out to conservatives that their outrage is late and that their outrage is misplaced. But that doesn't change anything. That doesn't change the fact that this is still going on, and that by the time Obama leaves office after his second term, the surveillance and detention state will be the new normal, will be the America that we all live in, that our children will grow up in, that we are significantly less free than we were before the election of Barack Obama.
What is that I hear above us in the room?
It's a drone.
Oh, it's a drone.
So what does all this have to do with the children's levy on the Portland ballot?
Yeah.
If we had a more sane state, if we had something a little more like the social democracies of Europe, we wouldn't need the freaking children's levy, because we would be taking care of our own like a civilized society does. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, all right, but now let's get back to the ballot. On the ballot, really important, I think, is the children's levy. It doesn't cost you as a taxpayer any more than you're already paying, which is probably too much, but you should vote yes on that one.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, so let's just get that one done.
Okay. Well, let's take some phone calls. What do you say?
Oh, yeah, a couple of phone calls.
All right. Sean, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
What's up?
Hey, the anti-fluoride groups are making some excellent arguments, but all the usual suspects, the lackeys of capitalism, the lackeys of Wall Street, people like Alex Jones, Ron Paul, the John Birch Society, all these groups are anti-fluoride. And so as much as I think the arguments are excellent against fluoride, I'm just tempted to be for it because of the people.
Let's talk about that, because that's an important point. And okay. The fluoride measure is on the ballot, and it is very important, and it's very important that people vote. But the strange bedfellows argument was summarized in an article, actually a very bad article in Willamette Week last week, long article, in which it was couched in terms of political interest groups rather than in terms of the question of fluoride. And it ends with essentially, I can't remember his name, Wiener, is that right? Yeah. It ends with a statement by this guy who runs campaigns for the Democrats saying, you know, this is where the left-wing crazies meet the right-wing crazies in opposition to fluoride. It's so insulting. The fact of the matter is that there are good reasons to oppose the fluoridation, and there are bad reasons to oppose fluoridation, and there are good reasons to think that fluoridation can help, but the data does not actually support that. What we really need to have is, in the local terms, a series of dental clinics with easy access, perhaps located in public schools. We really need to make sure that the current fluoridation through mouthwashes and tablets and teaching people how to brush their teeth and so on is universal and carefully done.
Amen.
And yeah. And this cheap way of solving the problem through fluoridation, which will put a minority of people at real risk, a small minority, but a minority nevertheless, which will enforce a public health measure which has nothing to do with communicable diseases, by the way, on ordinary people. The very fact that there is, we don't know the exact numbers, but somewhere between 30 and 51%, something like that, of Portlanders who don't want fluoridation. That means, unlike, you know, let's use the example of vaccination, because this is where the confusion comes in. If you have a certain percentage of the population vaccinated against measles, mumps, rubella, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, then you have an adequate number of people who are not going to transmit, they're not going to get or transmit those diseases, and you end killing those childhood murderous diseases. You end up not having them. That's a public health measure because you're dealing with, and this is really important, communicable diseases. Now, fluoride is not dental tooth decay is not a communicable disease. Dental decay, dental problems are not something that you catch one from another. So what they're really saying is that everybody should have a whole body dose of fluoride every day without any knowledge of how much fluoride you'll be taking in or what the consequences of the particular elements in that fluoridated product could be.
Yeah, you know, a little arsenic and a little lead.
No, it's just a little. It's just
well,
a little.
And what, one way to fund, you know, these excellent dental clinics that serve everyone would be a wealth tax. That's kind of...
Oh, perish the thought. Tax the rich? Oh, my.
An assets tax or a wealth tax, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. You know, just across the board, 15% on everyone with a net worth of, say, over $2 million. How about that?
Well, I'd go for it. But, of course, I don't have $2
million. Thanks, guys.
No, hey, thanks a lot for the call. No, I think it's really important to understand the distinction between a public health measure regarding communicable diseases, which, by the way, is, you know, the only way it's enforced is you can't send your kid to school without having those shots, unless, right, and there are exceptions, you have religious or highly philosophical motives to oppose those injections.
Yes.
Now, there's no such option with fluoride. You cannot opt out of it. Once it's in the water, unless you spend a fortune on a reverse osmosis filter, which I mean a fortune, you are going to get fluoridated water. If you're a little baby and you're fed on formula, you're going to get too much fluoride.
Yes, and if you're a non-human and you happen to live in the rivers and the streams...
Like a salmon,
you're going to get a whole bunch of that fluoride, because the vast majority of our drinking water supply is not drunk. It goes down the drain in one form or another.
Well, yeah, or passes through you.
And it'll be put into everything else. It'll be in your coffee that you enjoy every morning.
Your shower?
That you enjoy instead of making a pledge to KBOO, your latte. it'll be in your beer. It'll be everywhere.
Amazingly, it will essentially be unavoidable. Your garden, your organic garden, will suddenly be watered with fluoridated water.
Yeah.
And there's no way out. That's the thing. There's no way to opt out. Of the 30 to whatever percent of people who really don't want it for whatever reason, because they think it's against God, or they think whatever, you know, whatever. The right-wingers who think it's a vast communist plot, doesn't matter. Whether you have a good reason or a stupid reason to oppose fluoride, you will have to have it. There's never been a health measure with so much authoritarian complexity.
You can stop ingesting water.
And drink what?
Well, nothing. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't last very long, but you could do it.
You can't boil your egg.
All right, let's take another phone call. Marianne, good morning.
Hi. Yeah. So I have two things to say. Thank you, Abe, for pointing out that if we had a really good tax structure in this country, we wouldn't need only special taxes, which we're constantly getting hit with.
Yeah.
School levies or the environment, whatever. Yeah, very good. The other reason is, I call it back on the national level, I think that the reason that Obama doesn't come out strongly against the Republicans and doesn't campaign for Democrats the way he should around the country is that the Democratic Party, I'm actually not blaming Obama for this, doesn't really want to get anything done, and as long as they don't have control of Congress, they'll have a great excuse. So they can tell to us liberals, you guys would really like to help you out and get some progressive legislation, but these big bad Republicans just won't let us.
So you're suggesting the Democrats are really secret Republicans?
Sort of.
Well, no,
not all of them. There's some good ones, like Jeff Merkley's wonderful. You know,
that's true.
Great people in there, but.
So you're saying that the Democrats really have far more in common and far more sympathy with the corporate right than they do with the progressive left, and they're able to use things like the 60-vote filibuster threshold in the Senate as sort of a fig leaf and wring their hands and say, well, we'd really love to help you progressives, but, you know, well, what can we do?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Absolutely.
Well, you may very well be right. It's an interesting point, and I think we should think about that a little bit. Because, you know, the great dialogue of the left is, should there be a separate left-wing party in America versus, and can that work, versus should we all support the Democrats and try to push them to the left? And I happen to think that our system is rigged against the creation of third parties. But, you know.
It is. Yes.
Right.
But anyway, I appreciate your comments.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's take another one.
231-8187. This is KBOO. We're talking about the election coming up. You got to get your ballots in by Tuesday.
Thomas, what's up?
Yes, gentlemen. Hey, first off, I just want to say I really appreciate you guys bringing out a lot of inconvenient truths about the fluoride issue. I think you're spot on about that. But moving on to the issue you brought up about Obama, you know, it's really interesting. Yeah, that just a lot of language around the progressive and the Democrat response to the Obama presidency about disappointment and so forth. You know, it's interesting to think. Personally, I'm not disappointed with Obama's policy failures. Rather, I'm outraged by his successes. You know, it's almost as though, you know, we hear from our progressive friends that Obama does nothing except for twiddle his thumbs all day. I mean, the fact is that the Obama administration has been radically proactive. Obama's been very busy. Obama's been doing lots and lots of things and pushing legislation, and his cabinet has. But guess what? It's none of the things that the great body of the electorate wanted to.
And so, can you give us some examples?
Well, absolutely. Think about it. Think about the immunity for the telecoms. Think about the expansion of the war in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Think about this trade policy in Korea, which was radically against labor. Think about the failed the labor in Korea and the United States was against. It's like NAFTA on steroids. Think about the failure to renegotiate NAFTA. Think about the failure to support the labeling of genetically modified foods. And the list goes on and on and on. You know, and you think about it, you know, we talk about, well, why does Obama and this mystery? And the thing is there's really very little room for mystery. Ironically, you know, the truth is about diametrically opposed to what is popularly conceived. If you go back to the Obama election campaign, and before that, if you look at the whole list and cast of characters who were instrumental in promoting candidate Obama, it reads like the who's who of the 1%, the Bond Market Association, the banks, Goldman Sachs, etc. And so what's amazing is you have this whole known list of malefactors of the 1% that were underwriting systematically. Because why were they doing that? Because if you look and you read Obama's history, he was known not to be a leader, but to be a follower, to be a malleable character who was willing to do the bidding of Wall Street, big finance, big oil, et cetera. And so here you have the entire superstructure of the campaign contribution system supporting Obama because he's a follower, and yet you have all these college-educated liberals in what might be an incredibly important study of mass psychology thinking that they're going to have a leader. And so what are we left with? We're left with these evasions, these denials, these deflections, you know, and this term disappointment. I would submit that this was all knowable. This could have been knowable, the type of character, and exactly the same sort of litmus tests, exactly the same type of analysis of the history of the candidacy, exactly the same type of books that were written about George Bush Jr. and his psychology or his history and his connections. All of this sort of analysis and fact-based reasoning could have been squarely leveled on Obama. But what did we have? We had a Trojan horse president that rode on this incredible mass of basically delusional, magical Candyland thinking. And guess what?
Now, it wasn't just that, though. It wasn't just delusional, magical Candyland thinking. It was genuine abhorrence at the guy who was leaving office and his legacy.
Well, that, of course, but that is the springboard of the magical Candyland thinking. It's what you were mentioning earlier, that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And, you know, and the inability for college-educated liberal minds that pride themselves of being so transcendently elevated in their ability to analyze contemporary events and political realities than their Tea Party brethren. You know, think about it. Yet they're completely and utterly hoodwinked, and to this day, the evasion continues. You know, and talking about why Obama won't move. Obama's been moving vigorously and rigidly, and so, you know, and it really, to be honest with you, guys, this is tough love time. I'm so tired of the disappointment thing. And why doesn't Obama do it? You guys promulgating this myth. Why don't you just face it squarely? Go to the ACLU website. Go to the Center for Constitutional Law. You know, and down the road, go to any of the sites that advocate for a transition away from fossil fuels to renewable energy. To see what the spokespeople of these have to say about how inactive or inert the Obama administration has been. Yeah, this is crap. This whole thing about this bipartisan, it's a deadlock in Congress. It's broad support, broad bipartisan support for right down the line, for foreign policy, for supporting the banks, for the militarism. We're going to hell in a handbag on a raft of broad bipartisan consensus, and it's fantastical. to think of us, to think of the, you know, this road to hell of good intentions. We have given Obama this blank, absolutely blank check, and it's time to move from disappointed to outraged. Because my goodness, what more do we really have to say?
No, you're right. I think that your analysis is unfortunately quite correct. And I think what I'm waiting for is when he approves the XL pipeline.
Yeah.
Oh, I think
I think that's almost a done deal myself. But
yeah, I think he's going to do it. And it's amazing. I think it's we saw those massive. What was it, a year ago? Those completely broad cross section of the public and the scientists and those huge people were arrested at the White House, just not covered in the mainstream media. I think that if that doesn't do it, I don't think there's anything that's going to break the cognitive dissonance of the supporters. Yeah, you can go right back and realize, you can go read anything, read a book, read Right Turn, The Decline of the Democrats and the Future of Politics by Thomas Ferguson and Joel Rogers. Chapter and verse, the Democratic Party was essentially bought out in the early 80s. It's been a political machine. It is a tool of the 1%. And it's two-dimensional thinking to engage in this thought. Well, the lesser of the evils. That is a recipe for basically being indolent and refusing to recognize a hard fact that you can't just go and pull your lever and vote for your Democrat. You're going to have to accept the fact that active resistance to this two-party political cartel. So,
okay.
So come on, folks. Let's firm up.
All right.
Thank you so much for that call.
I don't find a way to argue. I'm in a mild case of despair because the whole electoral process has gotten so bad. And the NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, I don't even mention Fox, a machine, essentially doesn't report news.
No.
Rachel Maddow and shows like that on MSNBC are the only, and Amy, of mm-hmm. course, are the only people really supporting accurate news reporting and telling what the hell's going on. And meanwhile, we all always stick our thumb somewhere I can't say and hope for the best.
It's
and
true.
It ain't the best.
No.
So I agree with our caller.
Yeah, everything our caller said is true. But yeah, it's true. Well, there's always a but. You know that. There's always new. I know the internet has done its best to kill subtlety and nuance, but it lives on the radio. It lives.
Right here.
Subtlety
right
and nuance. We all got right. it right here. All listen right, to the is... tone of my voice. It's so subtle and packed with nuance.
Abe and Joe, talk radio show here on KPOO, 231-8187.
At 231-8187. Everything our caller said is true, but it is also true.
Yeah.
To note the following, the Republican House of Representatives has blocked nearly every initiative that Obama has brought forward that has been remotely progressive.
Which is why he needs to go to the people.
Right, including his American Jobs Act of 2011.
Oh, yeah. I think it's important to point out how the Republican machine and its media co-conspirators have really worked very hard to destroy any vestiges of social democracy in America.
Yes. It's also true that same Republican House and the Senate, through its abuse of the filibuster rule, mm-hmm. has managed to block appointees from everything from court seats to cabinet positions to you name it.
But, the first day of the new session of Congress is the one time when that filibuster rule could have been overthrown.
Yeah, and they tried to do that, of course, but the milquetoast Democrats didn't do it.
Well, yes, because there's a lot of what's called blue dog Democrats in parts of the country where people are reflexively reactionary.
Indeed. Now, none of this is to excuse the president, but it is to point out that, yes, he has a very dedicated, very virulent, and in some quarters, very racist opposition to what it is he's tried to do, such as it is.
Yeah. No, I think
so. And so that we can't, I don't think we can let this discussion go by without at least noting that.
Yeah, no, I think that's important to be fair about. We want to talk, however, about local ballot measures.
Yes, we do.
And important. So we said already, I think Abe and I agreed, that the children's measure is good.
All politics is local. It's good to connect these things with the broader themes we've been talking about.
Okay, so
it's important. So, all right, so measure 26-152. The local option levy improved natural areas water quality for fish. It's important to this. Yeah, vote yes.
That's my fish move.
It's important to restore habitat, to remove invasive species, particularly plants, and to make our waters as clean as possible before we add fluoride to them. That's very important. So vote yes on that one.
Okay, so where are we on the ballot measures?
We're a yes, a no, and a yes. So, yes on kids, no on fluoride, yes on water.
Okay.
Yeah.
We agree.
Yeah, we do.
Amazing. And and I want to reiterate, you can't play in this game without submitting a ballot. This is absolutely a crucial election. We know by all the data that there's a significant in the teens percent of America, of local people who are unclear on the fluoride issue. And we know that the narrowest majority of those apparently voting are against fluoridation. But we also know that the people who are for it, the West Hills folks and so on, will be voting because they are always voters. So it's others that are really important. I want to mention something about communities of color. All the data available in Portland say that communities of color, Hispanics, Asian Americans to a lesser extent, African Americans to a great extent, are opposed to fluoridation. But those same communities tend not to vote. So this is really a case where people have got to stand up. They've got to submit these ballots. They've got to take care of this now.
I don't know if that's entirely accurate.
Oh.
Both Latino and African-American voter turnout was higher than white voter turnout in the last
in the national elections.
Yeah.
I don't know about locally.
Okay.
So you may be
I'm
right.
Just saying, be careful. Be careful with your broad brush
strokes. I hope you're right.
Okay. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, Barbara Ehrenreich talks about kicking people when they're down.
I went to school with Barbara Ehrenreich.
In a combination lecture and interview format. At 10 here, Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a talk by Jeremy Scahill, given last week in Oakland, California.
He's cool.
He is. Scahill is the national security correspondent for The Nation magazine and the author of Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army, and the new book Dirty Wars, The World is a Battlefield. At 11 on stage and studio, host D. May Roberts looks at two classic lesbian and gay plays, The Children's Hour by Lillian Hellman and The Boys in the Band by Mark Crowley. Her guests are John Kretzu, director, and two defunct theater members, Grace Carter and Matthew Kern, who appear in each play. Also, Justin Hartwig comments on the film documentary Searching for Sugar Man. Great movie.
Yeah.
At 11:30 on Art Focus, Ava Lake interviews painter Sandy Rumagoo.
Rumagoo.
Who has a show at Blackfish. Sorry, Sandy, for that butchery of your last name. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support.
Yeah, put up money.
Put up quickly. Money. And vote, damn it.
Vote. All right. Where are we?
Let's go back to the phones.
231-8187.
Kenny, good morning. Oh.
Kenny got bored.
Marie, good morning.
The dawn is breaking.
Hello.
Yes. I'm not bored. You guys are the best.
Thanks.
Oh, well.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, sure, we are. Oh, go ahead.
Okay, so here's my comment, anti-fluoride, and you all gave me a great segue earlier because you brought up about the fish and the plants. I wanted to say the most splashing, dramatic thing I could say anti-fluoride, and then I realized, no, I should go the opposite direction. I should go for simplicity.
So here's a simple
comment on fish and plants. As we all know who've ever had children, fish, our goldfish, should not have chlorinated water, fresh chlorinated water poured into them. And many moms and mothers, women know plants, houseplants, also should not have fresh chlorinated water. So we're talking about water before the fluoride is added. So just for people to know in case they don't, the solution to that is you can let your water sit ideally overnight, 8 hours.
But you can't do that with fluoride.
You cannot do that with fluoride. And for my own kids and my own relatives, I've been telling them for years, if we don't have money for filters, at least let your water sit overnight, ideally in a wide-mouth glass jar, like a mayonnaise jar, and ideally maybe even in the sunshine is good. So imagine that if we're trying to avoid chlorine in our water and the things we have to do to help. Imagine if it's bad for fish and bad for plants, chlorine alone. What about chlorine plus fluoride? So I thought that might make the greatest splash, and yay, KBOO, and yay, Abe and Joe.
Well, thank you. And I do want to second what our caller is saying. The fact of the matter is that fluoride, particularly the form, the cheap industrial form that's going to be put into our water, is going to have trace elements inevitably of things like arsenic and lead. And fluoride itself, in terms of the interests of salmon and other fishes, is very, very bad. Now, remember that the oceans, the rivers, the lakes are filled with all kinds of undesirable chemicals, estrogens, Prozac, the hard-on pill, what is it? Whatever the hell it is.
Thank you for listening to Kevin, all that, so cool.
All those medicines, some of which are necessary for health, go into our water supply. We are already seeing fish in the ocean being oddly bisexual or non-sexual.
Yeah, really? Even with all the Viagra in the water?
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? We're not going to go there. I'm sorry I brought it up. Anyway, the point is, if you already are poisoning the water, why add more?
If you only knew how hard I'm struggling right now to not make more Viagra jokes.
Hard.
Okay.
How hard you're struggling. You're not very good at avoiding that.
Let's go back to the phones.
All right.
Beth, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi, Joe and Abe.
Hi.
Well, what I think is particularly interesting, Joe, you touched on the KATU survey that came out on the 10th and talked about it a little bit. But what I think is particularly interesting is if you look at the fact that, according to the survey, 42% of white voters say they'd vote yes, but only 30% of black and Asian voters would vote yes, and only 9% of Hispanic voters.
This is fluoride you're talking about.
This is fluoride, yes. Yeah. And that's the KATU poll results that came out on the 10th. And the whole race issue around this is a very delicate one, as you know, but this has been promoted widely as being fluoride, as being especially beneficial to communities of color and people of low income, and Healthy Kids, Healthy Portland, it frequently refers to the fact that they have all these organizations, these equity organizations representing communities of color on board with fluoride, but yet if you look at these statistics, it paints quite a different story.
Well, in fact, didn't the pro-fluoride people dump a lot of money into various person of color organizations?
They gave a lot of them grants to help promote fluoridation.
Well, that's kind of creepy in and of itself.
Well, but what I look at these statistics and I say, okay, it raises a number of questions for me. And again, it's a very delicate issue. Mm-hmm. But are these organizations really representing the people they supposedly represent if you look at these statistics? And what does it mean if you're a liberal pushing fluoridation under the idea that it's going to help communities of color when, according to these statistics, the communities of color don't want it? And are there ethical issues there? Or is that, to me, it kind of sounds like paternalism and, you know, we have a long history of doing things to... the history of Native Americans doing things for their own good.
Right, yes.
That were clearly against their will. So I think there's some real ethical issues to
Certainly.
Explore
but
here.
Certainly. You ask, what does it mean to be a liberal who is supporting fluoridation in part because, let's say, one might be interested in helping lower-income folks or communities of color? You might just simply be wrong. You might just simply be misinformed. I think we need to be careful of attributing malice here when that's not always the case. Probably in the majority of cases isn't the case.
Well, what are you saying?
What I'm saying is there's a lot of, well, like I said at the start of the show, a lot of intelligent, well-intentioned people who support fluoridation.
Yeah, but I think that the caller is making a point that's very important. There's an arrogance, a paternalism in
yes,
all of this.
There is.
It really is disturbing. And I've had many conversations. Most of my friends are pro-fluoride people. And I have these strange conversations where I bring up data, and you get into these dueling data situations where there's no, you can't win, they can't win. But what, to me, is the essence of the question is, does a significant minority of people not want fluoride? And if they don't want fluoride, if it passes, do they have a way to opt out? And the answer is,
no.
Unless they're rich, no. So that, for me, that in and of itself kind of closes the argument. It doesn't matter whether their reason is they believe in a strange conspiracy or they actually have health issues or they know statistically that it isn't that useful. That's not even relevant. The question is, in a democracy, is your body your own? Do you have control of what goes into it and what goes through it? Do you have a right to refuse something? That, remember, this is not like vaccination. There's no communicable issue here.
Go ahead, caller.
Well, I certainly wasn't ascribing malice to anybody. I mean,
don't get defensive.
Okay, fair enough.
who support fluoridation are very well-meaning. But to me, it raises a question when we've got these kind of statistics with communities of color, you know, if the results of this poll are accurate, clearly not supporting fluoridation, and yet you have other people supporting it, pushing it even, under the idea that it's good for these people. To me, I think that raises some real questions that we need to look at.
Well, you know, Europe has pulled away from fluoridation in large parts, which is interesting, and their decisions are based on data. Anyway.
Hey, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate your comments.
This is an issue of paternalism. It really is. I know better than you, so I will force you to have fluoridated water. It doesn't matter why you don't want it. Maybe you're like Mike Lindbergh, who's a former city council member, who actually has had his doctors warn him against this particular form of fluoride with the trace elements of arsenic and so on. Or whether you're somebody who believes it's a vast communist conspiracy or somebody who believes that this is something they don't want to do because they don't like the idea of it.
Just shut up and take your medicine.
Yeah, and take your medicine. This is wrong. Unless there's a way to opt out inexpensively, in other words, is the city going to provide everybody with a filter, a reverse osmosis filter? Those are expensive. Is in fact, all the neighborhoods like Rockwood and these other neighborhoods where they are not getting a choice because they get our water, our Bull Run water, and they're not even included in the election. Is that right?
Well, one might also ask the question, if the city is willing to make this investment in the initial fluoridation facility that has to be constructed.
Yeah, $5 to $7 million, I think.
And the annual cost of dumping more fluoride into the water supply. If the city is willing to make that investment, why not provide topical fluoride and fluoridation treatments to folks who can't afford it.
Well, in fact,
instead of dumping the fluoride in the water.
I'm not sure what the status of the use of fluoride pills and so on for children in the public schools is right now. It's a real issue about fluoridating teeth is a good idea. Okay, putting topical fluoride and sealants on teeth does reduce cavities significantly. It's very different than fluoridating your entire body, particularly when you're a growing child.
That's what I'm saying. If it's a question of equity, if it's a question of providing this, the health benefits of topical fluoride, which are undeniable, if it's a question of that, there's other ways to do it than medicating the entire population of the region.
And I would like to see, I really think what we have is a plague in this culture of excessive use of sweeteners, particularly corn syrup. We have a plague of bad diet. We have a plague of lack of hygiene in dental hygiene terms. We don't have dental services available to poor people in anything like what we need. And all of those $7 million would do a lot.
Why do you hate America so much?
I love America so much.
All right.
That's why I bother.
There's another measure on the ballot.
Another measure.
For those of you who live in Beaverton. This would enact a levy that would prevent the layoffs of teachers in public school classrooms.
Another good thing.
No-brainer. And yet another measure that begs a larger question. Why are school districts in this position to begin with?
Well,
sane society, a civilized nation, would not be in this position. We would adequately fund our educational system.
Well, there's two theories here. There's the conspiracy theory that is that stupid people are more easy to govern. Less educated people are more easy to govern. That's the conspiracy theory. The other one is basically that, hey, what's important is that we can kill our enemies. The rest of it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's depressing. I'm glad I could cheer everybody up. I just really, really, really hope that people will vote in this election, though. It's so important.
I do, too. Let's go back to phones. We need someone to rescue us here this pit of despair. Who's next? Donald, good morning. Hello, Donald. All right, we'll come back to Donald if we can. Jamie. Good morning.
Hey, hello? Hey,
hello.
Yeah, you're on the air, man.
Oh, cool. Hey, I just wanted to add that, you know, I'm way into my almost 60, and I have zero fillings, and I've been using no fluoride in the toothpaste, like Janssen toothpaste.
Oh.
And I, you know.
But I'll bet you brush carefully and thoroughly.
Right. You don't get cavities. But my thing, too, also is on May 18th, Nestle's is courting us out here in Cascade Locks. You know, it's another thing where our governor doesn't really weigh in on, you know, giving away Oregon's water to Nestle's is, you know, Cascade Locks, we might not drink your water, but we're still a part of the community of Oregon. And this is between 4 and 6, and there's a RSVP invitation, which their phone number is 877-441-0444.
You better give that number again.
Okay, it's 877-441-0444.
That seemed like it was one more number than there could be.
Okay, I'll try it once more.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Okay. It's 877.
All right, that's the first three.
Okay, 441.
That's the second three.
0444.
All right.
All right,
there we
cool.
go.
Cool. But anyhow, I support you guys, and I hope you guys support us, because I don't want
I think it's
coming out here. And that fish and game, that's, you know, you're talking about poisoning the fish there. That's the same thing here. We're drinking bad water here just because of our infrastructure, but, you know, we can't keep giving everything away.
Well, I think linking the Nestle, the bottled water phenomenon in our society, which is a lot of
That's where they should put the fluoride, then you got your choice, you know?
Well, see, now there's an intelligent idea. Bottled water available with a city support for people who want fluoridated water.
Well, that
cheaper, probably.
Alex Jones thinks that Pickens guy down there in Texas, who has all the water rights, he's going to put in something that makes people more submissive, you know, more dumb.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't think we need anything to make us more submissive.
They got ideas out there, you know. So I appreciate your show.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Have a good day.
All right. Yeah, everybody, we want to hear from you. We're supporting, we're talking about how everybody needs to vote. That's number one. And the ballots have to be in at the office on Morrison Street here in Southeast Portland. Has to be in by next Tuesday. And we want you to vote, whatever your opinions, whatever your positions. We, that is Abe and I, support the Children's Initiative. We think it's a good thing. We support the Metro Levy for Parks. We think that's a good thing.
No, for clean water.
Not
for parks.
Not for parks.
Right.
It's for, cleaning up the water, getting the weird species out, et cetera. And we, both of us, are really opposed to the forced fluoridation of the water supply of the city of Portland and its neighbors.
Yeah, that about sums it up.
I think so. But main thing you should do is vote, and we do want to hear from you. 231-8187.
Who's next? Brian, good morning.
Hey, good morning, you guys.
Hello.
Hey, I only had 2 points to make, but I got a third one real quick to make. But I'll put that first.
Okay.
I grew up on fluoride.
Okay.
And every tooth in my mouth has a filling.
Whoa! That's counter what we heard.
I know, but I'll tell you something else. There is a little cheater there. My grandmother did buy stock in Coca-Cola.
Yes, sugar, not
baby
good.
Bottle Coca-Cola.
So you brush your teeth with Coca-Cola.
Well, I'm almost.
Okay.
You know, but anyway, you know.
Well, that raises a really important point.
Yes.
About the whole sugar, the corn syrup, the farming lobby, the whole degenerate industry of pushing sweet stuff on our children.
Yeah, like, you know, buy stock in Coke, feed your kids Coke, and then as long as there's fluoride in the water, you're cool. So listen, but I have a point here, and I keep making this. I've been making it since Obama got elected.
Okay.
Okay, and I really have to say this. I'm not defending Barack Obama. I think he's been incredibly ineffective. But the one thing he did say, and I just kept waiting for everybody to do this. We almost did it at Occupy, and please, I'm not being butterfly idealistic here. But he said, I can't do this by myself. I need your help. And, you know, I understood that from Barack Obama, And, you know, I mean, I've been doing everything I could for years, okay, including not working for the man, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line goes like this, you know, and this is very cynical for me to say, but as long as you want to go to work and collect your paycheck, okay, and you're okay with all this, you know, because you're condoning it by doing it. You know, you go to Walmart, you go to Intel, you collect your paycheck every 2 weeks, and you say, well, you know, look, I'm going to vote the right way. Look, I'll show you, I'll just give you an example in Portland, how ineffectual that is. Okay, number one, if you protest, you'll get pepper sprayed. If you're wearing a black hoodie and you're a black man, you'll get killed.
Whoa.
And you know, like, this is my pet peeve. We have a huge community of people here who are very open-minded, very liberal, and very, you know, supposedly non-biased. But why do we have a Nazi? And we have a huge Jewish community, by the way. Why do we have a Nazi training an avowed Nazi, a proud Nazi, training our police forces?
Okay, the person you're referring to did display a lot of Nazi memorabilia, and he did set up a memorial for Nazis, for Nazi war dead up on Rocky Butte. What I don't want you to do is mention that person's name, because we're going to get involved in a defamation.
Oh, here. I don't even know his name. I don't care.
Okay, I just got nervous.
Yeah, no, don't get nervous, because I forget names real easy.
Because on account of how Nazi is a bad thing.
But, yeah, exactly. So like, you know, my opinion of it is like, you know, look, I mean, you know, we've been shot down with pepper spray, but we still go to work. And, you know, the bottom line goes, to change the system at this point, you know, we are all going to have to miss a few paychecks and miss a few meals. But I don't think Obama is going to take the stance of Martin Luther King and stand up there by himself and end up like Martin Luther King, you know, I mean, getting shot.
I'm pretty sure that
I mean, what's the guy to do?
Sure.
There's 200 people outside the White House doing the XL pipeline. You know, they're saying no.
Yeah.
Okay. That's 1,000 people. That represents 1,000 people per person. So 200,000 people out of 350 million people in the United States is not that many. And I mean, if we all said, look, we're not going to work today, we're not going to buy today until you stop this XL pipeline, we would definitely, you know, make some headway here. But 200 people standing outside the White House, they'll arrest 10 of them, and the other 190 will run home.
Well, I see your point, and I think what I hear you saying is that we really need to take a more revolutionary stance. Is that what you're getting at?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about, like, you know, I don't think we should bring our own pepper sprays to the rally. But I think we really need to stand
I'm choking
up
from pepper spray here. What?
Right, exactly. I mean, we we're arguing with these people. You know, you've had some of the most rational arguments on fluoride that I could possibly come up with.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, consider. And I was on the fence. But why are we even arguing? This is not about fluoride. This is about distraction and money. You know who's getting paid for the fluoride, and you know we're just distracted from all the major issues.
Well, I think your point
is
very good.
Major
it
issue.
Doesn't mean that we shouldn't vote on the fluoride issue, or that we should, if you follow my advice and Abe's advice, you shouldn't vote against the fluoride. But voting is, as I've often said, only one aspect of participation in a democracy. The other, more important aspect may very well be being in the streets and being a participant in community organizing and spending time working with your neighbors and your friends on issues that are important, not just locally, but nationally, not just nationally, but internationally. It's
okay,
a lot of work. It's a lot of work. But if it isn't done, our children and our children's children will suffer.
Okay, Joe, can I say one more thing? And
sure.
Then I'll
one
stop.
More thing.
I'll stop with my rant. But I'm going to tell you something. If we had prosecuted, you know, these police officers, if we got rid of this Nazi, if we, you know, blah, 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 if we funded our schools instead of this or that, you know what? I don't think if we had been doing the right stuff and quit swallowing this crap that we've been swallowing for years, we wouldn't even be talking about fluoride.
Well,
right now,
if you're talking about the general pacifism of the American people.
That's the point I've tried to invoke several times in the show.
I'm going to let you go. But
I know.
But I think it's really important to understand that the structure of the entertainment industry, the structure of the so-called news industry, the structure of all information systems, and the structure of requirements for employment and so on, inevitably disengage us from the participation that is necessary for democracy.
Oh, I'm sorry I didn't hear you. I was reading about Angelina Jolie.
Oh, well, actually, she's... All right.
Thanks, everybody. Vote! I mean, regardless of how disgusted you might be at the moment, you gotta vote. You gotta.
Yeah, and I'm going to just say it. Don't vote for fluoride. It's just an incredibly bad idea.
All right, we'll back at you next week. Exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio and the Board of Directors for the Oregon Music Hall of Fame congratulates Aaron Reyes, Evan Carlson, Mayu Sato Beckman, and Tatiana Hargraves for winning college scholarships from the Oregon Music Hall of Fame. These musicians will be performing at Jimmy Mack's in Portland, Oregon, on May 14th, from 5:30 to 7:30. Following their presentation, the Mel Brown Septet will perform as part of Jimmy Mack's Partners in Jazz series. More information about these performers and the Oregon Music Hall of Fame Scholarship Program can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, Barbara Ehrenreich talks about kicking people when they're down in a combination lecture and interview format. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a talk by Jeremy Scahill, given last week in Oakland. Scahill is the national security correspondent for The Nation magazine and the author of Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army, and the new book, Dirty Wars, The World is a Battlefield. At 11, on stage and studio, host Demay Roberts looks at two classic lesbian and gay plays, The Children's Hour by Lillian Hellman and The Boys in the Band by Mart Crowley. Her guests are John Kretzu, director, and two defunct theater members, Grace Carter and Matthew Kern, who appear in each play. Also, Justin Hartwig comments on the film documentary Searching for Sugar Man. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Ava Lake interviews painter Sandy Rumagu, who has a show at Blackfish. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for KBOO Community Radio. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now here's Alternative Radio.
Could we just stop the meanness? Could we stop the relentless persecution of people who are already having a hard time? Could we stop harassing the homeless and the indigent? You know, in a sense, to be homeless, to be indigent in America, you have entered the ranks of a population very little different from undocumented workers. It's like you're not a citizen anymore. It's like you have no rights at all here. In other words, could we stop kicking people when they're down?
That's Barbara Ehrenreich, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Barbara Ehrenreich, kicking people when they're down. Grim news. The rise in New York's poverty rate as a result of the ongoing recession has pushed nearly half of the city's population into the ranks of the poor or near poor. Ironically, the nation's largest city is run by a multi-billionaire. Almost on the same day, another report came out saying, hedge fund titans get lavish paydays stretching to 10 figures. people are eviscerated and dumped into the streets because of decisions made downtown in the suites. Do we lend a helping hand to the poor? Barely. Let them eat op-eds about values and the virtues of hard work. There are hundreds of billions of dollars to fund the latest F-whatever fighter jet, but scant little for people in distress. The pounding the needy are taking is particularly severe because much of the social safety net has been shredded. Can anyone say compassion and caring? Our guest today is Barbara Ehrenreich. She's a social critic, journalist, and activist. Born in Montana, she received a PhD in cell biology from Rockefeller University. In the 1970s, she was involved with the nascent women's health movement. After publishing an article in Ms. Magazine, she became a regular columnist there and with Mother Jones. She's the author of numerous books, including such bestsellers as Nickel and Dimed, Bait and Switch, This Land is Their Land, and Bright Sided. She spoke in Santa Fe, New Mexico at a Lannan Foundation event. After her talk, I had a chance to ask her a few questions. And now, Barbara Ehrenreich.
I am so glad to be in Santa Fe. For me, Santa Fe is like Mecca. I mean, it's like a very special holy place because of your minimum wage. Last week, that's what brought me here in 2007, 6 years ago, the minimum wage campaign, and I know there are people here from it. I was looking so much forward to coming here because last week I gave a talk at George Mason University in Virginia. And as usual in these situations, a student in the audience stood up in a Q&A and said that she had learned in her economics class that raising the minimum wage would cause widespread unemployment and economic ruin. Now, I hear this every time I speak on a campus, and I think that academic economics departments are dedicated to one proposition only, and that is teaching that the economic status quo is exactly fine, and it's perfect even for the poor. So I said to this young woman, I said, will you come with me to Santa Fe next week? Come and see for yourself. This is the highest minimum wage city of... Well, I think you're only outdone by San Francisco. I'm not sure. But I think you are. It's San Francisco, Santa Fe, and that's it. When I came here 6 years ago, so I have a comparison because it was 6 years ago, and I am not seeing boarded up businesses. I am not seeing a city brought to its knees by the raised minimum wage. Now, last time I came here, and right to this theater,